welcome everybody to the United Adoration Podcast. I am here with Father Jack King in Knoxville, Tennessee. Father Jack, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Dave.
And so glad you're here. And we're going to chat a little bit today about the arts and the local church and creative community and all sorts of great stuff. So Jack, can you just give us a little background about you, how long you've been at your current church, what your current church is like, and just a little background?
Yeah, sure. So I've been here at Apostles for, I guess, nearly 14 years. And I'm a native Knoxvillean. So Apostles was planted in 2006. And I was coming out of another denomination, you know, seeking the Anglican way, like a lot of us weren't born into this tradition,
yeah,
that kind of thing. And I never had an idea that when I was looking for the next place to serve, that it was going to be in my hometown. So I love that. And so the church was in the midst of being planted, and I joined it like 9 months in. I was an assistant at the time. So, and I think that was I think my first Sunday was the Sunday they started two services. So that was actually started like pretty early. And it was, you know, you had a traditional service and then you had a contemporary kind of service. They called it Celtic at the time. So that it had some Celtic instrumentation. So I became rector in 2012 and have been serving in that role since then. So yeah, and I think, you know, just to describe Apostles, I think that the intergenerational sense of the community is really important. That's something that I've said is, you know, a desire, not just for, you know, to have that in your membership, but to have it in relationships. And it's just beautiful when people who have lived many years are taking an interest in younger people who are finding their way in the church, in their vocation. And so that's really important to us. And I think, you know, spiritual formation for us is one of the top priorities in our life together. And, you know, other things are, of course, important, but that's one that I guess if you were in Knoxville and people are saying, you know, what's important to that church, you know, they might say that. So,
yeah,
that's a bit about us.
Oh, that's awesome, man. You know, and Jack, we've talked just a few times, but we really got connected through Rachel Wilhelm, who, you know, you hired to lead your worship and arts communities there at Apostles. And one of the things that really just struck me when we did chat on the phone was you as a rector in your view on the arts and worship. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was just talking, you know, with a buddy about arts at a coffee shop somewhere, but I just really felt that connection.
Like, yeah.
It's like we're on the same page about arts and worship. And I mean, can you just share a little bit about how you view the arts in the local church and how you arrived there and how you see it?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. That's a good question. Well, you know, I guess, first of all, I mean, you know, when we were speaking with one another and getting acquainted about Rachel, and like now that she's here, which is fantastic, it was like I was getting acquainted with her work with UA when we talked. Mm-hmm. But it was like it was a fantastic conversation with you. So I'm glad that we, you know, are talking about this at greater length today. So
yeah,
I guess with me, it's like I would say that it wasn't something that was motivated by ministry first. I would say that it came from me through the heart. Mm. Really just in someone who is desiring the fullness of God and the beauty of God in my soul. And so I think answering that longing or pursuing that in my own life, I mean, I think that is deep within our souls as human beings. And you know, the numbers of personalities that people have and how different they can be, it's like God has given us a desire for his beauty.
Yeah.
And so for me, it begins from the soul. And I think in my work as a rector, it's just, there's not a split between what's been growing in my soul and the discussions I'm going to have with people here and the things that I'm going to be preaching on. You know, ministry is not my own spiritual life, but that's the source from which I'm going to be speaking in the pulpit and, you know, casting direction. So I think it just comes from, you know, my own hunger. And maybe that comes from the fact that I think the hunger really is deepest because, you know, myself and others, like, this was not something that was celebrated or mentioned, I think, in churches of my youth, like people appreciating music, but not something that's like a real robust or holistic view of the arts. And so if you discover something that, you know, was meant to be integrated with your faith all along, and then for many years that's not been there, like, there's a lot of energy to pursue this, and, you know, in your own faith and in your own community, your own church. So I think that that's where it comes from, is that, you know, God made this world beautiful, and, you know, let's explore that together.
Oh man, I love that. How have you seen, so that personal hunger and that personal conviction of yours, how have you seen that spill over in mm-hmm. your local church context? What is that like?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, I like that question because you often don't know kind of what to do with that or how to share it. And I'll give you an example of something that I did, I think, pretty early in the time when I began serving as rector. I love documentaries. And so, like, I watch documentaries all the time, and it's interesting. Like, that can be a great source of inspiration for encouraging beauty in the church, is just, putting yourself in the place where you're experiencing other beautiful work. Well, I was watching this documentary, and I can't even remember exactly what it was, but there was this clip of Itzhak Perlman, the virtuoso violinist. And he talked about how he had this, this approach with his students that every so often he would say, "Today, when you come in, I want you to play something that either gives you chills or tears."
Hmm.
And that, to me, stirred something deep. And I was like, I actually want to do something similar to that with our staff. And so I came to our staff and I said, "I want you, you know, for our next staff meeting, we're not going to have an agenda. We're not going to do business stuff." I said, "I want you to bring something where you have experienced the beauty of God in the world." And I was like, "If you want to use media, we'll bring it in. You know, like, we'll have speakers, we'll have video." And, oh man, like, those are some of my favorite times that we shared as a staff. We did that like four or five times, and it was like, this would be really weird if we did this just as a staff. And so we brought that into the church, and periodically we would have parishioners do this, and so we called it the beautiful hour. And so we have two services on Sunday morning. Usually we have Christian formation hour, where that's teaching discussion time, but every so often we would just cancel the courses and say, "Today's we're going to have the beautiful hour."
Wow.
And that's like some of the things that people brought in, like, and the array of art forms, without even trying to be like, let's have diverse art forms. It's like, it's just come together, from visual artists to photographers. We had somebody bring in a slideshow about the beauty of God in science, and they weren't even a scientist. And, you know, storytelling, like, even comic books. I mean, and the thing is, it has fostered a knowing of one another, I think, with an immediacy that you can't even acquire that necessarily that quickly in a small group.
Yeah. Oh, that's an incredible idea. So how often do you do that?
Not as often as we need to. I mean, in COVID time, you know, not really had a venue to do that. I guess our goal was to do that quarterly. And you know, one of the things, this probably comes back to having a place for beauty in the church, is that if you're not intentional about it, it won't be as regular as it ought to be. And so I'm kind of aware, oh, it's been too long since we've had a beautiful hour. And I think that's actually something that is, it's kind of like on the rector to say, we need to make this a regular fixture. It can't be an afterthought. It has to be something that's regular. So, you know, if we did that like quarterly, that would be a good rhythm for us.
Yeah. So how have you learned? So you're stirring up beauty in essence, also creativity. You know, people in your congregation, both staff and just congregants are being inspired, right? How have you learned how to shepherd that?
That's a good question. And I think that if you're a rector, like one of the best things about that is that you're able to see the array of gifts that have walked through the door. And I think being a rector in that sense with your people is similar to parenting in this sense, that it's like, I don't want to have an agenda for my kids about what they ought to be good at doing or not doing. Like for example, my son like doesn't play sports, and I love sports like growing up. And I'm like, well, that's not who God made him to be, but he loves to work with his hands. And it's like, my job as his father is to be curious about how God made him and to draw that out. I think that's the same thing as being a rector, is that as you get to know people, you discover their loves and you find where there's, you know, deep affection for, you know, certain works that they're gifted to do or desire to do. And so it's basically to give space to draw that out. And so if you have a curiosity about your people and who God has sent to you, and then provide space for them. Now that's an art form in itself, but I think that's kind of, I guess when you say, how do you shepherd that? It's like, it's not like whiteboard stuff or strategy stuff. It's probably more of an intuition of, let's create space for, you know, these gifts and a place for someone to offer what they love doing. I mean, an example of that, I guess, is that we had someone who was studying for a master's in fine arts, and we had her give in Lent an instructional evening about how to interpret visual art, which I don't know if it was Marc Chagall's art, but you know, that was the kind of evening where it was like, okay, here's someone who's like studying this, give a platform, create space.
Right.
So I think when I think about shepherding, it's like, how can you create a space for them in a way that leads us in worship too?
Yeah. You know, we talk with a lot of rectors and senior pastors and church leaders from various denominations. And you know, what one of the things, and I don't want to stereotype, but one of the common fears, I think, from senior pastors or rectors or leaders in the church is giving artists a microphone to talk or teach, just be, and I know that also causes some friction every now and then. And a lot of pastors and leaders feel that that's a risk. How do you respond to that? Or how have you learned to be okay with that idea?
Yeah, I think that this is where the spiritual life of the faith comes in, because it's so important for any leadership, not just in creative arts in the church, that and this is where, you know, spiritual formation for us has been such an important priority, is that you're cultivating kind of like the Christ-like virtues within someone's calling. And so I think when you have someone who's like gifted in a particular way, you know, a rector has to And so I guess what I'm saying is this applies to anything in leadership, not just creative arts. Maybe there's more of a stereotype with artists that we need to overcome. Yeah. But it's like, I think it's the job of rectors to not only create space, but to be patient.
Mm.
You have to be patient with, and it's like, well, look at your own life and the mistakes that you've made. And if you reflect upon like your own years in serving Christ, like you see just, you know, mistakes that you've made or immature moments. And it's like, that should inform patience with others. And, you know, I think this is why like UA is so important, by the way, just to say is that when you have people who are, I think, celebrating gifts, but it's like when you can model Christ-like virtue within leading these, within leading music or an arts ministry in the church, that's really the issue. It's not who the person is as an artist or even who someone is as a preacher or whatever it may be. It's, can we integrate Christ-like virtue in this? So I think it's a stereotype or a caricature on artists if we've, you know, if we go in a fearful way towards giving them a platform.
Yeah, that's great wisdom, because I think one of, and this isn't true for everybody in every church, but a lot of artists feel disconnected from the church,
mm-hmm.
or not welcome in, or they can't bring their gifts. And what that results is a disconnect, which includes discipleship, right?
Yeah.
Which includes, you know, being in an environment where you are formed spiritually and I love this idea about like, listen, we're growing together, and that means giving a safe space to take mm-hmm. a big swing. You're your sports guy, right?
I'm yeah. not,
but you know, take a big swing, and, yeah. and you have people around you to help you and to grow and disciple. And I was talking with another rector recently about risk, and mm-hmm. and I loved his approach to why risk with the arts is so worth it from a church leadership point of view, because beauty is so needed in the church. And I've heard that theme already in just the last few minutes of what you've been saying, but why do you think beauty is so essential in the church?
Yeah, you may be familiar with the quote by Dostoevsky. It's from one of his novels that I've not read it, but familiar statement when he says beauty will save the world. Mm. It's interesting, Dave, like particularly in the past, like 2 years, I've felt an urgency to seek out a theology of beauty. I would say probably more than any other time in ministry. And here's one of the main reasons why. It relates in my mind to how divided we've become in our culture. Because what's happened in the past few years especially has been, you know, these really passionate arguments for truth. And I don't want to take away from those important discussions. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the conversations have broken down and they've become really volatile,
mm-hmm.
which means that how can you trust one another and how do you actually, you know, find truth when, okay, so all those questions, we're familiar with them. It's so interesting. I mean, this is where beauty comes in. When we're trying to convince, persuade, or whatever with argument, it's like, it's not working right now.
Right.
But there is something that like, a song can do, a story can do, that penetrates through all of that and reaches us in the place that we are human. One of the things, you know, so we think about like the transcendentals of like truth and goodness and beauty. And one of the things that's fascinating that, you know, theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar did is that instead of starting with truth or goodness in theology, he began with beauty. And it reaches, it just reaches us in this really raw place. And so I think that it goes, it's so direct to us. I mean, you know, sometimes you can hear the opening chords, you know, you can hear, like when I hear like Barber's, I'm forgetting the title, but there's this, this piece where it's like, you hear the strings and it's like, I don't know why this grips me in a deep way, but it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think because we have, you know, like this, we're broken down in conversations, we need to move towards beauty, because that can maybe heal some things in us that we can't achieve through conversation.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. You know, for those who don't know, Father Jack and I are both priests in the same church body, the Anglican Church of North America, the ACNA, and we're a missional church body. We're about planting churches and going on mission. So, Jack, how do you see beauty and impacting the mission of the church?
I think it, you know, I think that one of the things that a church can do is make sure that is cared for well, first and foremost in worship. And I think in particular, like the high seasons. I mean, it's interesting. You may have heard this, Dave, how Ash Wednesday is attended more by visitors than maybe even Easter Sunday now. And so for me, it's actually, it begins with liturgy, not trying to be clever or, you know, doing it. It's really like going deeper into the tradition in my mind, which often means like recovering things that may have been lost. So I think that these are missional in a sense. It's like not in an immediate way, but you're evoking a presence of something that is greater than, you know, what we can understand or explain. I mean, if that's not evangelism, I don't know what is. And I mean, certainly it's, you know, the mission of the church has to be moving out and beyond that. But I think that if we're equipping the saints for ministry, and, you know, we believe as rectors, right, that the greatest vehicle for mission and evangelism is sending our people into the world, then my goodness, like if we're not forming them in the beauty of God that is inspiring their imaginations, that is forming the way that they see the world, that actually calls them to look for beauty in God's world, that's going to shape who they are in office spaces, in schoolrooms that you and I will never enter. And so I think that there's an equipping sense of like really planning to make a priority of worship being as beautiful as possible. And you've got to have artists in that process leading that effort.
How have you made space? You shared a couple of things about how you've made space for artists, but is there any other, like on the practical side?
Yeah.
Like practical things that you've done and you've seen bear a lot of fruit of making that space for artists.
Yeah. So I'll begin with the music minister that was Rachel's predecessor, David Clifton. I think making space, first of all, is simply building good relationships and getting to know artists as, I mean, people and as friends, like, but knowing them as artists, which means that, like, learning what the work is like for them and taking them into or getting a sense of what it takes to be ready for Sunday, what it takes to write a song, what it takes to record new songs that the church hasn't heard that the church can sing. And so, like, if you become familiar with that, I think that that informs how you guide. I mean, there's so many times that, you know, I would say to David Clifton, I'm like, hey, take the time you need to write. Hmm. And I shared this with him. I was like, you know, I just came back from praying last rites, you know, for this person, you know, as I'm telling this to David Clifton, I'm like, they were playing your album and they're getting ready to cross worlds.
Wow.
You know? And so to me, that makes connections where it's like, provide them the space, not just to be ready for Sunday, but to write and produce the songs that are going to be in places of people's lives that are so critical. I mean, that's the effect of beauty. And, you know, so when Rachel came here, one of the things that I talked to her about was having that freedom, you know, doesn't need to be in the office like regular office hours, like every day, but to have that room for working on new songs and recording new songs, working on projects with other people. So the work is just very different for artists. And so I think understanding what the habits are required is so important, and then creating, giving them that freedom.
That's so refreshing to hear from a, you know, from a senior pastor rector position, because I think that speaks so much value into what artists feel, because artists feel a call with their art, right? Like they feel that God made me an artist and he gave me things to do and to say. And for many artists who have kids, families, mm-hmm. and need to work, it, you know, sometimes the creation process is always at the left, it gets the leftovers time. You know, it's like late at night when, or after you've, you know, put your kids to bed. But for you as a leader to give permission and space for artists in the best part of their day and life and rhythms, the freedom to create is an incredible example. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. And if I could just make a connection for rectors and preachers, I mean, you may have this same experience with preaching, Dave, but there are some weeks that you feel a sermon in the course of writing, it has more of an importance than some of the other ones that you've preached in recent times. And then there's other weeks where the calling, the demands of pastoral work mean that you don't have as much writing space available. And, you know, I want it to be as good as possible, but one of the things I have to do is recognize, okay, it's got to be good and, you know, good enough this week, because God's calling on me was probably more with people in crisis.
Yeah.
And so it's like, understand the difference in preaching work. It's like, well, it's similar, I think, in other creative forms too. It's like, okay, if someone's working on a new song, that's similar to writing a sermon where you feel like this is a word that is, you know, I really hope has an impact more than one Sunday. And I can kind of feel that. I think that's like it is with a new song or a new album. Like I know Rachel's finishing like her Requiem album, and it's like, we don't have many of those and we're impoverished without them. Well, that takes set apart time. That there's an intensity to that. So I just want to make that connection. It's similar to preaching in that way.
Yeah. Do you have, you know, for you as a leader, I mean, do you have a vision for arts in the church, or are you making space for that vision to develop? And is there a difference there? Like, again, on the practical side for rectors or pastors who are in the same position where they value it, they want it, but what does that look like?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, because some of the things that that are important about cultivating beauty in a parish are intangibles. Like it's, in other words, it's not necessarily going to have a particular outcome, or it's going to conclude in like a gathering, but it's some of the behind the scenes kind of things, like organically connecting people who have similar gifts and just making an introduction And, you know, because one of the beautiful things about creating art is that it works so well in relationships. I mean, you see this like with strings that play together. We just had our candle moss service, and it was like, this is a great example. Like, as Rachel was leading, she gave room for our cellist and our violinist to play. And it's like, that was just, I mean, that was an artistic connection that led us in worship. It was an offering, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's some of the stuff that, like, you don't, I mean, you're just making connections with people, and who knows where that will go. I think that there is an intentional aspect to cultivating the arts too. I mean, actually, we're in a time of doing such a thing, and it's been on my heart that our church would become more active in making things with their hands. And, you know, one of the things that we did a few years ago, I encouraged people to get into the work of gardening, like, and which is an art.
Yeah.
And it's in and of itself. Well, you know, in our Anglican tradition, we have this thing called Rogation Sunday, which is the sixth Sunday after Easter. And so I was like, hey, this is like an old custom. Y'all may think it's weird. But we ought to plant things like in our gardens, and because it's all about caring for this world well and understanding that God's the giver of all good gifts. And it's in other words, it's like the corollary to Thanksgiving. This is blessing seed time.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, bring all your plants. And everybody like brought seed packets and plants. And so we prayed for those, you know, there's like a procession. So we prayed for all those plants, and it's like, but for the next months, people were telling me what they were doing in their gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And what that has led us to, and I didn't plan this when we started to do Rogation Sunday, but we're looking at now doing a community garden. And that has, you know, brought people into a desire to serve in the church in ways that they didn't have as much a connection. It's like they love gardening.
Like, yeah,
this is their passion outside of their job, you know? And so, so finding ways for people to make things together. Iconography has been another one for us that we're trying to revive something that was here at the beginnings of our church, an iconography guild.
Mm.
And just saying, this is important, and we want the church to be a place where you can learn how to do some of these art forms.
Right.
So we do have a plan, but it's modest. And I'm totally okay with being modest, totally okay with going slow. I actually think that's the better way. But, you know, just saying, like, let's begin making things together and learning how to do that together. So believing that's good in and of itself.
Here's why that's so good, in my opinion, anyway, is that I think a lot of times we think of, like, arts in the church as music and, mm-hmm. like, video people.
Yeah.
And that's the arts ministry in the church. Where, now, of course, those things are included, but
yeah,
it's so much broader and deeper than that, I think, in, you know, with telling the beauty and wonder of God and in all kind of artistic disciplines, and even ones that out of the box, like gardening. You know, yeah. I love that approach to the arts in the church about creating. So that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I just got one more question, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. How would you encourage other rectors, senior pastors, or anyone in church leadership about developing beauty and creativity in their church? What would you say to them?
Yeah. So a few thoughts on that. I think the number one thing, at least with the musicians in the church, I'd say go be present in their rehearsal space and pray a blessing over their work. I mean, that's like entering into the workshop where it's tough work. I mean, especially like if you're praying, I mean, if you come in a time when they're, you know, getting ready for high seasons, what, you know, and I've done that before. But you're saying, hey, I don't want to take much time, but I want to thank you all and pray a blessing over this work that you're doing right now. Cause it's just tough. And, actually I mentioned that I wanted to, read something, if it's okay with you.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
This is something I read to our worship team. I'm only going to read a selection from, it's a poem by W.B. Yeats called Adam's Curse. So are you familiar with this, Dave?
I'm not.
Okay. So this to me is like, I read this and I thought of our artist and I was like, I want to read this to them because I know this is what they're doing. And so he writes this. It's a longer poem, but this is the important section. Yeats said, I said, a line will take us hours maybe. Yet if it does not seem a moment's thought, our stitching and unstitching has been naught. Better go down upon your marrow bones and scrub a kitchen pavement or break stones like an old pauper in all kinds of weather. For to articulate sweet sounds together is to work harder than all these, and yet be thought an idler by the noisy set of bankers, schoolmasters, and clergymen the martyrs call the world. And there's beauty and tragedy in those words. It's the beauty of like this very difficult, arduous work that artists do. And yet, and what Yeats says is that to articulate sweet sounds together is to work hard, like scrubbing a pavement, and to be thought an idler. And so it's like you're working hard, and yet people don't realize that that's hard work. And so I felt like I want to go into the people who are working hard and say, I see you, and this is the work you're doing, and then pray a blessing. I would say to the rectors that one of the things that I underestimated when I became a rector is the importance of that office in the work of blessing. And if a blessing is withheld, a friend of mine said, there's a void and there's pain and there's doubt. And a rector or a priest can take all of that, not take all of it, but can take doubt away, at least about, you know, our regard for their work, by being present, by praying, and speaking words of encouragement. And so that's, I think that's foremost. I mean, there's, you know, some other thoughts too, but I think that's where the work begins.
Jack, thank you so much for your time, for your thoughts, for honestly just your example and encouragement to artists in your church and other churches too. And so bless you, man.
Thank you. Well, I so appreciate you having me on here. I've really enjoyed the conversation, and the work that UA is doing, may it be for the glory of God and to increase his beauty in the church.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jack King, everybody.
Thanks.